So basically, the reason that today they say that the scientists claim that the world is 4.5 billion years old, the Earth is, and prior to that, the prevailing opinion a decade ago, even or 2 decades ago, maybe a little longer now, I'm dating myself, was 3.5 billion years old, is because the whole notion that there should be an old world is a notion that really began with Darwin's theory of evolution. Because for Darwin's theory of evolution to work, you need an old world. If the world is young, then there hasn't been enough time for evolution, which takes place very gradually and slowly, to have been completed. So therefore, scientists needed to say that the world is old. So prior to, let's say, 150 years ago, all people maintained that the world was just over 5,000 years old. And only with the advent of Darwinism did this change, and did we need to come up with alternative theories of how old the world is. And then they backpedaled and said, okay, this is the result. You know, there's this famous story about this archer who was in the forest and he had shot, and somebody came upon this archer and every single arrow was a perfect bullseye, like hit the target in the middle. And the fellow, the passerby, was very impressed at the archer. He said, "You're amazing. You've hit every single target in the middle." And he said, "Well, it's easy. I first shoot the arrow and then I paint the target around it." And the idea is that's what scientists did. They first came up with the notion that this world needs to be billions of years old, and then they tried to find methodologies that would back up that contention.
Okay, may I ask you a question? Sure. As we are, Avram, we keep getting discovery of bodies, skeleton of bones or whatever, and they
fossils.
Are carbon dating or they're using other things.
Yeah, I'm going to speak about that.
Speaking about,
Yeah, but carbon dating came after Darwin, obviously. Carbon dating is only about 50 years old.
What I'm trying to say is that, our theory that it took 6 days for the world to, and every one day is 1,000, so 6,000, and then we are yet discovering bones of our supposed ancestors.
Yeah. So I will respond to that later on in the presentation. It's a good question, and I'm getting to it.
So can I just point out that there was one area in science that it didn't have a vested interest to find the world being older, and that is in the late 1800s, which was after Darwin, is that right?
Yeah, late 1800s was after,
right? So when all the revolutions in physics, when the speed of light was the maximum, and all these people discovered, and then they discovered that stars, in order to be the distances that we think, so that there's a motivation completely not connected with any, that there are observations, and so there's a whole section that had its input into the age of the Earth, apart from Darwinism, which, as you point out, had a vested interest in making the Earth old.
Okay, fair comment, and well, I wasn't really planning on discussing stars that are millions of light years away from Earth, and yet we see their light, so therefore the light must have been traveling for millions of years. But I think, let me just get a little bit further in the presentation, and it will automatically be answered, I do believe. I hope. Anyway. Hey, how are you? Okay, so... So how does science determine the age of anything? So there are different methods, but they all share the same point, and that is they are all methods of inference, which means that you infer one thing from another. So there are primarily two methods of inference that are at our disposal. Two categories, everything falls into those two categories. One is called interpolation, which means we know how something reacts under two extremes, and we intend to infer from the two extremes what might be the reaction of that thing in the midpoint. So let's say we know how water molecules react at 10 degrees Celsius at sea level, We know what they look like at 80 degrees Celsius at sea level, and we infer what they would look at 50 degrees Celsius. So even if you have not seen a molecule behave at 50 degrees, but you have seen it at 10 and you have seen it at 30, and you've seen these modifications, these characteristics, you can infer what the middle, what it would be like in some point between the two. The other method of inference would be extrapolation. And extrapolation means that you make an inference beyond a known range on the basis of certain variables within that known range. So we know how, we observe how water molecules behave when they're heated from 10 degrees to 50 degrees, and we extrapolate what they're going to be like at 80 degrees. Okay, so that would be extrapolation. Now, all methods of dating anything that people use are all extrapolation. We know how a object behaves over 10 years, over 20 years, over 30 years, and therefore we extrapolate how much it would behave over 100 years, 200 years, and 300 years. And since we see a certain sign in the object today, we can infer that this object is X years old. Now, let's look at this graph on the slide and assume that this is the behavior of water molecules from 1 degree Celsius at sea level to 99 degrees Celsius. So as you see, at 1 degree, it's at the bottom left of the graph, and then as you move closer to 99 degrees, it's a consistent graph. So at any point, the gradient of the graph is exactly equal, increases equally, so therefore you can easily conclude that this is a... we could conclude that if this is how it behaves from 10 degrees to 20 degrees to 50, 80 to 99, one could safely assume that at the point 150, 1,000, 1 million, 1 billion, it's going to just keep on going. But of course we know that what happens at 99 degrees or at 100 degrees, it doesn't follow the graph, it doesn't follow the trend of the graph. There's all bets are off because of course when you boil water, I had this for an American crowd, so when you boil water, it's at 212 degrees Fahrenheit or 100 degrees Celsius, all bets are off. Everything changes. 100 And at zero, yeah, at boiling point, and at zero, at least at sea level, that's what it is, and at 0 degrees Celsius, again, everything changes because it starts becoming ice. So all of a sudden, we had this beautiful, perfect plan to project how things are going to change, and then at point 100, something came from out of nowhere, shocked and surprised us, and the whole structure of the molecular structure of water changes at 100, to the point that you can make no inference from point 99 to point 101. It's any inference is purely wrong at that point in time.
There's a couple of things. Your graph between whatever it was, 0 to 99, mm-hmm. was linear, and what you wanted to say was it should be linear going out.
If I would project,
area,
not right, knowing what's out,
right,
that's extrapolation.
Linear,
yes.
Right. So the first thing is that it already goes non-linear a little bit before 100. I think if you do the experiments, it's not 100% linear, because what happens is near boiling point, suddenly there's tons and tons of evaporation,
yeah.
Right? Even though it's not boiling yet. And when there's tons of that evaporation, that graph already begins to waver a little bit. Okay, so yeah. It's around...
Fair, so let's say you go to 80 degrees, whatever. It's not. The point is, I just wanted to show with that whenever you're extrapolating, you don't know, as Dick Cheney said, what you don't know. And what does that mean, that you don't know what you don't know? It means that it's not scientific. Any extrapolation is not scientific.
Well, that's actually the point I want to make, the opposite of that point, which
okay.
is that until you know that... Scientists just work off the best knowledge that they have. So if you measured that graph and it was 100% linear up to your ability to measure,
yes.
and somebody said, so Mr. Scientist, tell me outside that range, can you please tell me? You're saying that a good scientist will say, I'm sorry, I haven't got a clue. I'm saying a good scientist will say, I don't know for sure, but on the best evidence available,
yes,
we would
high
say
probability.
This. So that
yes.
Careful scientists won't, because science doesn't know everything, so it can only work on what it knows at the time.
Correct.
And so as long as the scientist covers himself by saying, this is less reliable than that, my mm-hmm. information here is less
yes.
reliable, that doesn't, because he says it doesn't mean he's suddenly
absolutely.
Gone out of the
yes.
bounds of science.
Scientists will speak today, certainly after a scientist by the name of Heisenberg, a German
yeah.
scientist. Scientists today, especially after he came up with the uncertainty principle, only speak in probabilities.
Would you please go back to the graph for a moment?
Sure. So that was the graph, that's what I say, is the known universe, and then when you extrapolate it, that's what the assumption is that it goes. So the probability is, if the graph continues at 0.99, at 0.100, 0.101, that is what we assume will continue.
But I'm making the point, we don't know what the measurements on the axis of the graph are in the first place, and presumably we're measuring the state of water with zero on the y-axis, zero being mm. freezing point,
yes.
water being in the state of ice.
Ice, yes.
And at 100 degrees Celsius, water is at the state of boiling.
Right.
And therefore, I'd say that the graph is correct if we're using the assumption that on the y-axis is simply referring to the state of water, the water molecules, H2O molecules.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure whether, I agree, I'm not sure whether it should be linear or non-linear.
Well, my point is, at this point, when it's conjecture, you can only say there's a probability that it will continue linearly because you don't know what you don't know. So we don't know what's coming up. So, but we can say that it is a probability that just as we've seen consistent progression up to this point, we can assume consistent progression going forward from this point. Or a high probability.
Yeah, no, it's just the best you can do. We haven't
okay.
really got evidence.
The best we could do, I'm willing to accept that in terms of what I'll call forward extrapolation in this, what this is. The problem is that scientists don't look at they don't age or date things based on forward extrapolation. As fraught with difficulty as that at least has some degree of certainty. They work on something called backward extrapolation. So let me just explain that using a mathematical example. If you take two numbers, let's say the numbers 1 and 2, and you take four operands, the four operands, which is addition, multiplication, subtraction, and division, then you have a whole bunch of possibilities. So 6. In other words, you could have 1 plus 2 equals 3. You could have 2 plus 1 equals 3. So one possible answer is 3. You could have 1 times 2, or 1 multiplied by 2 is 2. So 2 is another possibility. You can have 1 minus 2, so minus 1 is a possibility. You can have 2 minus 1, so 1 is a possibility, etc. So there are 6 possibilities. If you apply the four operands to two different numbers, you get 6 potential results. So in a forward extrapolation, using numbers 1 and 2 and the unknown of which operand we're going to use, you could potentially end up with 6 results, which is not so bad. But if we start off with a number, let's say the number 3, and I say how many possible combinations of numbers, operands, can you have that will equal and result in the number 3? And the answer is they are actually infinite. Possibilities, because 1 plus 2 could be 3, 0 plus 3 could be 3, minus 1 plus 4 could be 3, and so on. So there's infinite possibilities to come to that result of 3. Now, when scientists are trying to date an object, all they have is the object, which is the number 3. And they are trying to guess how it got to the number 3. But how could you guess that without knowing anything for sure. You don't know what your initial numbers were, what your operands were, what the limitations were that came into this result. And actually the limitations are, there are no limitations. It's infinite. There are infinite paths to have come to that result. So if you want to arbitrarily say, look, I need an old Earth so that my theory of evolution makes sense, that, you know, the world evolved living matter from non-living matter over... But to make that true, to make that make sense, I need a very old world. So you come along and you say, let's take 4.5 billion. That's fine, you could take 4.5 billion. So then you look at a result and you'll find a methodology that equals that result that starts off with 4.5 billion. And you're not going to listen to me when I come along and say, it's not... You know, there's that and there's the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy. You want to talk about the Tooth... You know, maybe there is a Tooth Fairy. I don't know. I don't want to say with absolute certainty that there isn't a Tooth Fairy. You cannot... It's almost impossible to prove that something doesn't exist. So I can't prove that the Tooth Fairy does not exist. To prove the Tooth Fairy does not exist, I need to know every molecule in the universe... at the same time. I have to be aware of every molecule in the universe at the same time, and even molecules are physical matter. I need to know also all the spiritual realities of the world and all things that haven't been discovered, and I have to know all of that at the same time in totality, and then I can say with certainty there is no Tooth Fairy.
We're not trying to prove whether something does or doesn't exist. The fossil existed. We're trying to... Really
the fossil exists.
Right.
The fossil exists. We're trying to say, how did it get here? How did it get in this state? How does the fossil get in this state? So if we have a tree, we know for sure that if you cut a tree and it has 40 rings around it, we know that the tree is 40 years old. It was planted 40 years ago.
By extrapolation, the same extrapolation that...
By extrapolation, precisely. So let's go back to the 6 days...
We don't really know the age.
We don't really know the age of the tree. We don't. Unless we planted it, then we remember and we've kept it. But that's within human lifetime or recorded history. But beyond that, we don't know for sure. Even that, you can't know for sure, but I'll explain that in a second. So let's go back to my creation story, which is that in 6 days, 24 hours, 60 minutes per hour, and a minute being 60 seconds, as we understand that, God created the world in 6 days. In those 6 days of creation, in my story, one of the things that God created were trees. It was part of creation. Trees on earth. Now, let's say... that that we would cut down a tree on Friday, on day six. So the world is 6 days old, the trees are just a few days old, and we cut down a tree, a full grown tree, and we count the rings. How many rings would that tree have? The answer is 40, or 50, or 60. So it would look like a 60-year-old tree, but just like Adam and Eve, in my understanding of the creation story, we're not created as embryos that grew into toddlers and then human beings, and then they became Adam and Eve. But they were created, Adam was created as a man with a beard, a fully grown beard. He was an adult. And Eve was created as an adult, ready to procreate and have children, according to my story. So therefore, if they were created like that, they were created as adults, why couldn't God have created a world which was already in an adult state? And for worlds, that means you look around 4 billion years old. But you don't look a day over 4 billion, I promise.
But the fact that God created a mature world, a world where Adam and Eve were not embryos, they had an age, means that it's a completely valid Jewish question to say, why were they created at 21 or 13 and not 8 years old, or not 50 years. I mean, I don't know.
It's a valid question. And why was this tree 40 years old?
If they would have gone to a doctor, the doctor would have measured the heartbeat or whatever and said, you appear to be 21 years old, right?
Right.
The hypothetical doctor. But it would remain a question as to why, because the question behind my question is this, is that the human being himself is a clock. Right? That is, by going to some expert, he'll tell you how old this clock is. What time am I showing on my clock?
Yes.
It's your first example with the Nivea cream, right?
Exactly.
What is my clock? So the question is, being that God created a world, and presumably on that theory didn't put proper evidence other than the testimony of the Torah itself, but no other independent evidence of what the world's age was, then we're entitled to ask, what could we learn out of what the world's age appears to be? There's something to teach us.
Yes, fair.
Right? The world, Adam appears to be 21.
Yeah.
I want to know why did God create him at 21 and not 18?
And this tree at 40 years and not 60.
Yes, why, so yeah. It all becomes sort of valid questions for scientists to ask.
Okay. That's all before we had the discussion about extrapolation. Because the discussion about extrapolation, the point I get out of that, is that it is unscientific to look at the state of something and then try and guess its age. And I would think that if you would go to a doctor and ask him to do any test that he wants on you and then guess your age, there's actually two ages there is an actual age that's calculated based on your birth certificate, and then there's your biological age, and those are almost never identical. In Western society, they're mostly, our biological age is much older than our actual age. So, but if you go to the gym and you eat right and everything, your biological age will actually come down. So I think actually your example buttresses my argument. But again, let me just summarize. So what I've said now is that extrapolation is forward extrapolation is an inexact activity, exercise. Backward extrapolation is practically useless because you cannot see the current state of something and guess how it got. The current state of anything does not tell you how it got to that state. That's what backward extrapolation is. So let's use a real example, and that is radiometric dating. And radiometric dating is basically there are what are called parent isotopes and daughter isotopes. And the parent isotopes are transformed over time into daughter isotopes. So some very common examples of this, the most common is carbon-14, which transforms or exchanges into carbon-12 atoms. And the reason this is common is all living organisms, flora and fauna, have carbon in them. We have carbon, and so we can look at the radiometric signalers of the carbon-14, and we can look at how much carbon-14 is transferred into carbon-12, and we can therefore guess how long that process has been going on for. How long? Because we know what the half-life of a carbon-14 isotope is. So that is how carbon dating works. It's a lot simpler than human dating. It's very simple. 14 transforms into 12 at a steady pace. Now, the problem is, let's apply that to what I was saying before. If I would look at a fossil, or look at some, a decaying plant or a decaying animal or a body or something, and I would calculate the ratio of carbon-12 atoms to carbon-14 atoms, then I can say, well, okay, so given a consistent degradation, it's and looking at the damage that has been caused here, we're looking at about a 30-year-old fossil or 3,000-year-old fossil or whatever it is. The problem is, how do you know what the degradation was? What's your baseline? What do you start with? Again, Adam was a fully grown man. this any object that you look at will contain carbon 12 atoms in it and carbon 14. So what is your starting point? You don't know what the starting point was, so it is impossible to deduce anything from the result which we have in front of us now. And the same with uranium turning into thorium, or thorium into lead, or rubidium into strontium. All of these things, which are what scientists use, and by the way, there's huge discrepancies between each one of these methodologies and other methodologies as well, in the result that they come to. Discrepancies that are in some cases
orders
of magnitude. The discrepancies are bigger than the total amount of the lower counts. So why do they give different results? And the answer is, well, of course they're going to give different results, because none of them are scientific and none of them are accurate. They're all backward extrapolation, and they're all actually almost arbitrary. You cannot deduce anything. Carbon dating is quite accurate over a 70-year period. But even things we know, their age, from recorded history, over 70 years, it really becomes less and less accurate. Now, if that's the case, you know, like if lightning strikes a fossil, what's that going to do to the isotopic degradation? It's going to create a huge radiometric exchange into carbon 12 atoms, and your whole thing is going to age overnight hundreds of millions of years, because it got struck by lightning and that sped up the process. So you don't know what's happened at 0.100 degrees Celsius, where water starts boiling. We don't know what's out there beyond there, and we actually have evidence today that it doesn't work over 70 years. And our evidence extends maybe over 100 years or 200 years, where we know the age of an object, and it's not working. Now, you want to take that and tell me that over 4.5 billion years that's accurate? I think that you're dreaming in non-scientific technicolor. All right. So, what is the original mixture of substances? What was the original ratio? That's your first problem. What is the rate of exchange? How do you know that it's consistent right throughout? Because the rate of exchange depends on different factors, like heat, radiation, electric voltage, as I said, if it gets struck by lightning. There's all sorts of things. A flood, a biblical flood, could age the world by billions of years, and that could be a very plausible explanation. We believe such a
version. To be fair to the science behind it, many people tried to affect the rate of decay of an isotope by heating and by cooling and by doing all kinds of chemicals.
Successfully.
It was a major thing. And people didn't. That's why it became.
No, they were successful. The original. That's why the original.
Give me a journal article which says that you can.
Sure.
You can alter the rate. The
I'm trying
rate
to understand your arguments and follow a little bit to give
arguments.
Would you please explain?
The reason I'm ending up like a debater with you. I'm sorry.
It's fine. That makes more interesting for me.
Right.
I'll throw my
reason
into the debate.
I didn't want to. That right. But the reason why isotopes were selected as what I call good clocks, like really good clocks, is because try as they may, the scientists were unable to change their rate of decay. So, for example, I have a clock here which works perfectly. If I trample on it, it'll stop working perfectly. So people tried with radioactive decay to try all kinds of things to make it speed up or slow down. And if any of those things had been successful, then all of a sudden they wouldn't have been candidates for these long-term clock buildings.
And is your argument therefore that science behind dating the Earth is accurate because science has discovered
it can't be accurate
decay at a certain rate? Is that what your argument is?
Yeah, that's the argument of scientists. It all can't be accurate because there are so many discrepancies between it. I'm simply pointing out that I think one of the discrepancies isn't the case that that you can alter the rate of decay. Maybe lightning can. People tried to alter it because unless you've got something that decays at a constant rate, you wouldn't even begin to think you could use it as a clock.
Okay, I've never personally done this experiment, so I can't tell you from personal observation, but all the literature that I've read, including peer-reviewed literature, all says that they were able to very significantly affect the rate of decay based on things like heat, radiation, electricity, all of these things, using different...
thought that you could use cesium or these things as a clock. I mean, they use cesium today with clocks. Accurate clocks, and they're independent of temperature, they're independent of
temperature controlled environments.
Not cesium clocks. They work independently. That's why they're so good.
Some materials are more stable than others, that's for sure. But carbon, which is what we're dating living organisms at least. Not the rocks and so forth, the age of the earth, but the way that we date, that life has been on this earth for 500 million years or whatever it is, that comes from carbon dating, and carbon happens to be a very unstable.
I just want to establish my position. I'm not arguing that these methods have accurately established the age of the world. I'm not trying to go to that extent. Mm. What I'm saying is, The mailer of these particular methods, according to scientists, was that they were unchangeable. The problem
Using
carbon versus using nitrogen versus using give all different values. That's a big scientific problem.
Relatively unchangeable in perfect laboratory environments.
Well, that's where I disagree.
So
if you give me your email address, I'll Google some stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been wrong before, but I've thought...
And so have I, so I'd be happy to be corrected, but I thought...
The reason why scientists loved these methods was because they couldn't, under any circumstances, alter them, except, I think, in atomic reactions, in a nuclear explosion, they would alter.
Yeah, of course, well, there haven't been too many of those, but...
That radioisotope and carbon dating is inaccurate.
Is accurate, that's what you're saying.
I'm trying to be really careful in what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's accurate. What I'm saying is it was chosen as the ideal clock because it has one great advantage. And to extrapolate what I'm saying, therefore I'm saying it's accurate, I'm not going that far.
No, we've finished with extrapolation. No more. okay, I don't know. My understanding was that these things are not very stable. I'll be happy to be corrected on that.
I don't think
it still doesn't affect my argument that much because you still don't know what the original state of the starting point was, and you've got the discrepancies. And just because there have been some pretty big scientific hoaxes to try and make this work. Including Pilfered Man, for example, and all different hoaxes of that nature that have subsequently been proven to be hoaxes. So scientists are not, it is not beneath some scientists to hide the facts that are known to them in order to make this theory stick. You know, you weren't here last week, but we discussed Darwinism in our last discussion. And it's on the podcast, so if you want to go and listen to that, you can. And you'll see that there were some real fundamental flaws in Darwinism, and to the point that the question becomes, so why are there still people who support this theory? And the answer is, in a nutshell, because the alternative is crimps your style. You can't party. You got to feel a little bit guilty because the alternative is creationism, and that an intelligent being created the world. So even if you have the most flawed theory in science, if it somehow gives you another way of explaining how we got here besides involving God, that is desirable, because who wants God to come and
Professor Hassofer, did you ever meet him? Do you know him?
I know who of him. Yeah.
So Professor Hassofer, at the time, must have been like 15 years ago, 93, something like that. So the 2.5 billion, the age of the 2.5 billion,
mm-hmm.
Showed fairly well that there was not enough mutation that could have happened in 2.5 billion years to result in a complete world as we we see now. I don't know what he would say about whether four. I don't think that it came. With
I don't think 4.5 billion years.
4.5 billion years doesn't either. I never. I mean, I distinguish in how I argue between Darwinism, which just seems like a nothing, versus the age of the Earth, where I think that there's a whole bunch of different scientific evidence that the Earth is older than 6,000 years. As inconsistent as it all is, I mean, but none of there's no carbon dating that gives you 7,000 years or 4,500 years. There's nothing anywhere near that.
I skipped all those slides. let me go very quickly
on
the slide.
Do we have some science that's got
If you look at the first module, man-made module that landed on the moon's surface, there's a replica of it at the Smithsonian in Washington, a full-size replica. You'll see that it has very large, spindly, spider-like legs, about 2.5 meters tall. And the reason for that is because they said, given a moon many hundreds of millions of years old, sitting in space without an atmosphere like the Earth has to protect it from different space debris that smashes into it, the moon should have, 2 meters of dust covering it or something. But of course then you see the next you see from the pictures that I have up on the slide there and the actual Apollo subsequent to the first one, all subsequent man-made modules that landed on the moon had little short stubby legs, because there's only about 1.5 inches of dust on the moon, and that is one of the greatest mysteries of all of the lunar expeditions, is where's all the dust gone. So somebody vacuumed up over there, but somebody hoovered it. There's the receding moon. The moon recedes from the Earth at 1.5 inches per year. And, since the moon is about 384,000 kilometers away from the Earth, there's a certain point, and had the moon been revolving around the Earth for millions and millions of years, there's a certain point where it will actually break free from the Earth's gravitational pull and be flung out into space, which hasn't happened yet. So therefore, that is also consistent with a much younger version of the world. There's sedimentation in the oceans. There's where sedimentation means sediment from rivers is taken into the ocean, and there's not enough sedimentation in the Earth's oceans to be consistent with a 4.5 billion year Earth, or a 3 billion year, or 2 billion year Earth, but it's much more consistent. And I can show you articles in popular scientific magazines like Scientific America, which are based on scientific discussion about the sedimentation or the influx of salt into the sea, as being consistent with a far younger Earth. But the one I like, and that's the one I just jumped to, is Henry Morris, who's a demographer. And, he just did a very simple calculation. If you assume a consistent population growth rate of 0.5%, so 0.5% over history, that's generational. So every generation, the Earth's population increases by about 0.5%, which is very conservative, because the birth rate was much higher historically than it is now, at least in Western societies. So if you assume that you've got a 0.5% growth rate, That is consistent with a world which is about 4,000 years old, with a population that began with two people, which happens to be quite close to the biblical, our understanding of the fact that that half a percent includes disease wiping out large parts of the population, wars also, and for every kind of person that dies, there's a person that's born, and still, so half a percent is quite a realistic figure that most demographers say is probably quite accurate over human history, and we only have 6 billion humans on Earth. So if you do the math, well, at least in 1985, there were 5 billion. So if you do the math going back, there's not enough people to sustain, people to explain a world that's where, humans in some form or another have existed for millions of years.
Well, humans, nobody says that existed for millions of years. They're saying for tens of thousands. I mean, I don't know where humans came in on the
evolutionary scale. Yeah, I'll tell you.
So
hold on 1 second.
Except the Darwinism side.
That's still quite a huge assumption, the 0.5% growth rate, given that they're trying to prove that humans have existed over a 5,000 year period, whereas if they were to extrapolate the age of the Earth back as well as the age of mankind back a few, say, extra hundreds of thousands of years, they would have to come up with a different growth rate. So the evidence there is not supported by the demographer's argument at all.
You'd also have to ask whether this guy Morris isn't exactly like the Darwinists anybody who wants to come up with the answer can do it. Oh, 5.5% does it. Yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. That's the average growth rate.
It's exactly your argument. The same. In other words, we are going back and back like the dog chasing his own tail because we are trying to prove something. Why can't we just believe that you are? Full stop. End of discussion.
Well, then I'd be out of a job. I only went back to the, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, the Eocene period, the first appearances of horses, which was 55 million years ago. Now, I don't know if horses predated, certainly modern man they did, but caveman, paleo man, was somewhere in the last 55 million years, according to scientists, but closer to the 55 million mark, I would say. So let's even say it's 10 million, whatever. It's not 4,000. Now, that half a percent, I think that half a percent, what intrigues me about that, and you're right, it's extrapolation, and I actually killed that argument right at the beginning of this discussion. But the half a percent actually did come first. In other words, in that case, they drew the target first and then they shot the arrow. In that is quite accepted by anthropologists as being the consistent rate of increase of population over time, factoring in things like wars, disease, deaths, and births. That is, the half a percent came first.
I'm putting forward an argument that the half a percent, even though it may be agreed upon by experts, can still be quite flawed, given that even experts agree with percentages and theorems and yet change their agreement over time.
Right. I accept. If you're going to throw back my argument at me and say it's extrapolation, it's backward extrapolation, it's not accurate, I will readily and happily agree with you, as long as it's an even playing field, as long as we can also agree that the scientific, quote unquote, pseudoscientific evidence of an old Earth is equally as flawed.
It's not an argument thrown at you, or more questioning science and validity of the data.
Yes, well, that was my hope, that you would end up questioning the science. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's not the science, it's the assumption. Mm. There's a certain assumption that everybody makes, from my year one teacher in, to that, anyway. I...
And I've been taught to pull apart arguments and theories in my study of research design.
Excellent. But that is a skill well undertaught in the world. I think we all
what
just...
What skill is that? Sorry, to pull apart...
To not accept everything, but to look...
That's great value. Basically, just question your own, you know...
Yeah, I say question everything.
Yeah.
There's nothing... Everything must come under the scrutiny of questioning. The minute in science, the minute you stop questioning a theory and you say, that's it, it's fact... You stop being scientific, because that's not the nature of science. The way that science works is something is proposed, torn down, something else is proposed in its place, torn down, something else, and that's how it progresses, and that's how it should be, and that is good science. But that is not necessarily the science that has impacted a lot of people's religious beliefs, contemporary religious beliefs. So, I am...
How can we actually, we as Jews... How can we actually reconcile ourselves with all those theories out there? I mean, like the other day, I watched an SBS documentary when we were trying to date the Sphinx, you know, and it was fascinating because I listened and I said, oh, that's interesting. So how can we question? How can we, what do we do about it? I mean, this...
Look, one thing's very important. Let's say that you were adamant that the world is 4.5 billion years old, and nothing I or any other scientist could possibly tell you would change your mind that the world is 4.5 billion years old. Okay, you're sure of that. Is that a contravention of any...
So am I an apikoros?
Mitzvah, exactly. Did you contravene any one of the 613 commandments by maintaining that position that are in the Torah? And the answer is no. You have not contravened any. You can be a perfectly good, religious, practicing Jewish person who believes the world's 4.5 billion years old. I know many of these people, and you are well within the dictates of Jewish law. So it's not an argument that I really have to win, and if I don't, then you are doing some terribly idolatrous thing, right? It's not, you're not rejecting God. You can believe in God, and you can believe God created the world 4.5 billion years ago and still be okay. The problem that I have with it is that, A, you know, I believe it's not true, and it's not being... scientific, and the second problem I have is that it there's a certain nefarious assumption that's taking place over here that I don't like, and that assumption is that almighty science is the truth, and the Torah is kind of like the weak-minded cousin of science. Religion is the less sophisticated of the two, the less proven of the two, and the one that's on shakier ground. And that's an attitude that I've spent most of my life fighting against. Because I think you have to come and say, the religion is what's on solid ground. And it is the science that by nature is ever evolving and changing, and what science believes to be the facts today will change tomorrow, and that's why.